welcome to this special episode of Mission Makers, brought to you from Davos, Switzerland, during the World Economic Forum, where me and my team were really lucky to be on the ground curating some amazing spaces and discussions this year, from the future of mobility with the astronaut Nicole Stott, who has spent over 100 days in space, to curating workshops around neuroscience and primal movement at the House of Balance, where I exclusively premiered my music track Infinite Being that features Deepak Chopra. I'll be interviewing key visionaries and thought leaders from these communities, such as the Female Quotient, 100 Women at Davos, Finnish Flow, and many more over the next few weeks to share the best of our collaborative insights on implementing solutions while digging deep into our collective consciousness to take responsibility for the protection and preservation of this world. So let's dive straight into today's conversation with Mark Terrell, the founder of UnDavos, which is undoubtedly the biggest underground community of young global leaders, global shapers, tech pioneers, and futurists, really asking the big questions at Davos. So today we're welcoming back a former guest on the podcast, Shelley Zelis, and gosh, where to begin with the unbelievable impact she's had with her company, The Female Quotient, otherwise known as The FQ. The FQ's mission is to curate experiences and solutions to achieve gender equality in the workplace and beyond. And that includes pop-up equality lounges where they curate important sessions at places like Davos, CES, and so on. They have hundreds and thousands of allies pledged to their work, from CEOs of Fortune 500 companies to world-renowned celebrities. And really, Shelley's company was the first to really unite women at Davos, as you'll find out in the podcast. And recently, Shelley and the FQ rang the bell at NASDAQ, which was just unreal to see. I'm so lucky to know Shelley, and just a huge hats off to all the unstoppable work she does to tirelessly turn the wheel for equality. Shelley, it's a pleasure and an honor to welcome you back to Mission Makers. How are you doing today? Where are you joining us from?
I'm so happy to be with you, and Farah, you know how much I love you. I'm coming in from Los Angeles. I'm home. This is my hometown. And usually I say my home is United Airlines, but this week I'm in Los Angeles.
Nice. So we are speaking just a few weeks after the whole craziness of Davos. Tell me how it all went. I got the chance to come down to your space this year. It was amazing. But yeah, firsthand, tell me about what it was like.
You know what? It was actually, I think, a turning point moment for us. I mean, we've been at Davos for 8 years now, and of course we make it the place for women. We call it the place for conscious leaders, but we started with something called the Girls Lounge at Davos, and we called it the place for the 17%, because only 17% of white badges are held by women. And after women started supporting women in our space, and the space kept growing and growing and growing, we then evolved to Equality Lounge, the place for conscious leaders. And I have to say that what was remarkable this year was women flooded Davos. I actually, if I had to write a hashtag, it would have been Women Own Davos. And I, while we're still not in Congress at the levels we should be at, Davos is no longer a boys club. You know, it really, because we created an unbadged space for women to come and feel safe, secure, and that they belong, they come as if it's a conference. And they just book their ticket. And of course, you have to be able to afford an airline ticket to Davos and a hotel, which is very expensive. But if you can, you show up. And to me, it was game changing to walk the streets and feel the energy, the presence, where it really was the home for women. And that made me incredibly happy.
Absolutely. It brings a smile to my face because I remember there's a friend of mine who flew in all the way from Miami just to come to the FQ for one day before going to London. And if a space like yours didn't exist, like, there's no way she would have been part of being able to be part of that conversation, and also just experience and receive that knowledge and like that insights of like what's being said at that level. So you know, it's that, thank you so much for creating a space like this, because it is so necessary to open up that inclusivity and accessibility at a place where so many conversations and decisions get made. So talking about decisions, how does the FQ measure the impact of their community being at a place like Davos?
You know, when we first got invited to Davos, we were invited with the following: we want you to come, but you might not feel welcome. And, you know, you talk a lot about representation and reflection, which matters a lot. If women don't see other women at Davos, they feel it's not a place for them. Mm. And, you know, that's why my head on the one hand said, who wants to go to a place that I might not feel welcome? And my heart said, I need to be the first and be brave and bold enough to create this little space that everyone will feel safe and secure. And so we were the first. And I brought the party. I brought 50 power women with us to say, you know, we don't need to apologize and we don't need permission. We're here. And we came as a pack. And that's, you know, I call it power of the pack. A woman alone has power. Collectively, we have impact. And so, you know, to see now the impact that that had, and exactly what you said, resonating with women saying, we can come to Davos. We don't need permission. We don't need a badge because we're not getting white badges. And it's exactly why I intentionally choose to be outside of Congress, so that it's an unbadged space, so that everyone is welcome. Everyone. You show up in Davos, you come to this lounge. And now I see all these other women groups opening up, you know, spaces in Davos. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to inspire this collective of all of the power. You know, when you all come together, it's game changing. We see what's happening, you know, all over the world when women come together. And when women support other women, we all rise. And that is the most important thing that we do. And this year, you know, Jamie Dimon always came to support us, the CEO of JP Morgan, and he's been unbelievable and part of what gave us the validation and the credibility. But this year we had so many Fortune 500 CEOs coming, and we launched a whole new concept called the Flipping Point. And the Flipping Point requires action. You know, WEF came out with a report, the World Economic Forum, saying it'll take 132 years to close the gender gap. 132 years to close the gender gap? Who's going to make that a priority or even put it in their budget if it's not attainable or achievable? So we challenged the world and the World Economic Forum in particular, saying that we can close it in 5 years. And so when you walked in our space this year, it said the Flipping Point, and it says, we created the internet in 25 years. We put men on the moon, should have been women if we had spacesuits, in 10 years. And we created the vaccine for COVID in 1 year. Why should it take another 132 years to close the gender gap? It's not that complicated. And so we were asking for 10 Fortune 500 CEOs to step up to the plate and be bold and brave enough to prioritize gender equality so that we could actually close the gap in our lifetime and in a CEO's legacy. And I think we got all 10. So it was really remarkable.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, 132, none of us will be here by then. There's absolutely no, especially when we see how fast, you know, we've witnessed the most amount of technological change, you know, and so many different things. There's absolutely no reason something as basic as like gender equality, which is basic but complicated, should be, you know, take that long. What do you think are some of the key drivers to make that happen in 5 years? Like, what would we need to see, you know, from the world to make that happen?
I think most importantly, it's a conscious mindset. You know, I say we need a moonshot mindset. With a moonshot mindset, anything is doable when it matters. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. That expression came for a reason. And I think our biggest obstacle has been accountability and responsibility, where the responsibility lies. And it really does lie at the CEO level. While we need our chief diversity and inclusion officers, and we need HR, and we need finance, you know, CFOs and COOs and CDIOs and, you know, all of those, ultimately, the accountability lies at the top. You know, where are you putting your priorities? And when you look at great resignation or, you know, all of the things that we're hearing about, women are leaving the workforce and the workplace, and they're starting their own companies to make their own rules, which is what I did. That's how I got the chief troublemaker title. I had to leave to create my own company because I needed to be the boss and make my own rules because I was so tired of being the exception. I wanted to become the new norm. And that's what it's going to take, is creating a new equality playbook in the workplace and not retrofitting, because what was done isn't wrong. It's just women weren't in the workplace 100 years ago when the rules were written. We need to have a white board with a white space and create the rules of the road that will work for everyone and not just for some. And so, you know, pay gap. I mean, how hard is it to pay Sally the same as Peter?
Definitely.
Does that take 132 years to figure out how to cut a check? I don't think so. The problem has been that we've been trying to retrofit, but that's not going to work. It's too expensive, too costly. How long have you been here? How much were you getting paid? That's too hard. But if we close the door of inequity and open the new door of equality starting tomorrow with new hires coming fresh out of college or skills, or, and we say equal pay for equal work, regardless of gender, starting forward, we don't have to worry about what we can't do. Let's just create the rules of the road of what we can do, drive forward. And then you look at care, caregiving. We are losing our best leaders to care, to caregiving. And caregiving is still predominantly a female responsibility. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? We need to share responsibility at home so that we can have equal opportunity at work. And the solution is not going to come from expecting governments to fund it. It's going to come from the CEO creating the right policies and benefits inside the workplace. And then you look at the sponsorship model, which is filled with bias. But if you flip the model on its head, and we're working on something called proximity shift, it's so easy. These things are not hard. It just requires commitment. And then flexibility and hybrid. We still haven't figured out how to universally solve that. All we do is talk about the words. Oh, we need flexibility. We need hybrid. We need remote. But if all Fortune 500 companies made the decision to have people back to office Tuesday, Thursday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then the flexibility, not with elective, but create the same policy that'll work for everyone. Because we know who's going to elect the hybrid and remote. It's going to be women. It's going to be caregivers. So it has to be something that everyone is working on the same, you know, roadmap, so that we're not leaving people out, or they become the invisible again, and it becomes the golf game, that those that are on the golf course are the ones that succeed and get promoted and, you know, et cetera. So little things like that, that actually are not complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, it just takes focus and accountability, responsibility, and some budget to experiment with new ways of thinking.
So what happens when that CEO is like so resistant to mindset change and just can't evolve with the times? Like, how do you tackle that mindset?
That's up to the board. And, you know, it's time for the board. And of course, we need more representation on boards so that, you know, it's not the legacy board, you know, board that is still in place. The board needs to make that decision. But I really believe if we have 10 Fortune 500 CEOs leading the way, the other 490 will follow. We just have to prove that it works and that it is not complicated. It actually is simpler than creating a vaccine, simpler than putting people on the moon, simpler than creating an internet connecting the world to one another. It is much easier than all of those things that we have done in less than 25 years.
So well said. 100% agree. What do you think are some of the misconceptions around Davos, or the biggest misconception perhaps?
That it's a boys' club and that women should not be there and should not have a seat at the table. Mm. That is the silliest thing that I have ever heard. And you know what? There truly is the perception that that is the truth. And so we just blew it all up and just said that is, we're all welcome. We might not be invited to sit at the table in Congress, but as you said, the most important conversations were happening in the Equality Lounge. And we just shifted the power from Congress to the Equality Lounge, not in all of the topics they talk about, but in changing the equation and closing the gender gap. If you truly want progress, action, accountability, and knowledge sharing, because we're a collaborative organization, you show up in the Equality Lounge and no one is going to say no. Mm-hmm. It's our space. And we create the agenda and we invite the attendees, which is everyone. So talk about inclusivity. It's the place of inclusivity and the place where it happens for those conversations.
Definitely. How does Shelley Zales prepare for Davos?
I really don't. So I really my team is amazing. And, you know, I say when purpose meets passion, you're unstoppable. And, you know, we come straight from CES, which is the first week in January, where we have 75 panels. And then we went to JP Morgan's health conference, which was a second after, and then we go straight to Davos. And so it really is the power of the collective. And, you know, everyone on our team is so incredibly valuable and passionate about what we do. And our partners are remarkable. You know, we have remarkable partners. The Aquai Lounge is not mine. It's not yours. It's ours. And it's everyone shows up with open arms. You know, I always say you walk in, you get a hug, a hello, and a yes. And then you say, what did I just agree to? Because it's a place of transparency and a place of trust.
Mm,
so absolutely. I don't need to prepare. I just show up. And, you know, it's, you know, the team has done all the heavy lifting already. And the conversations are so organic and unscripted, even though they have pre-questions approved by, you know, different panelists, et cetera. What happens in there is the most magical stuff is the unscripted. And it's the connections, the relationships that form, you know, once inside the lounge.
Mm, yeah. And it's the opportunity to be there to really to capture that serendipity in a way that just unfolds in itself in this magical place that really has a special energy field surrounding it. Well, apart from the equality equation, what would you like to see more of next year at Davos?
I would love to see more CEOs come, you know, so more. We have a lot of white badges, but I'd love to see government officials come. We're working on a whole initiative with first ladies, which I think that they have so much power and so much voice yet to be used to help change the equation, close the gaps. And I would love to see every CEO from Fortune 500 company that is at Davos to be in the lounge at one point or another. And I'd love to, you know, get flooded with phone calls from their team saying, you know, so-and-so wants to come. I mean, it's like Jamie Dimon's team calls us in advance and says, you know, what works? Here's his schedule. How can we schedule it? That's conscious leadership.
Mm, definitely.
And we had, you know, Chuck, the CEO of Cisco, who was unbelievable, completely leaning in and embracing, you know, everyone in the space with truth and transparency and trust. It was remarkable. And of course, we always have Joe Yu, the global CEO of Deloitte, who always shows up, you know, and all the consulting firms have been, you know, so supportive and involved. And Edelman always brings, you know, their top people. It's a place of everyone feeling that it's their home. You know, we say it's the place where everyone belongs. It is, we get the most remarkable phone calls from everyone bringing their talent to the table. And we're all talent. You know, I think that's the most important thing. You don't need a white badge to be powerful. You know, the community inside our lounge is so remarkable. And so for me, I also would love to see, you know, we have a lot of women networks now coming to Davos, making sure we are all adding value. 1 + 1 = 11.
Mm.
You know, that is incredibly important too.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying today's show. And of course, if you are, a little review or share with your friends would be much appreciated. But I just want to take a quick pause to share some interesting news that Mission Makers has unexpectedly grown into becoming a boutique podcast agency. And for the last year and a half, we've secretly been producing content for some high impact brands from tech unicorns in Silicon Valley to disruptive companies at Davos. So if you're thinking of starting your own show and you're looking for some help, then send us a message because we would absolutely love to bring your story to life and help you amplify your content while really connecting on a much deeper level with your audiences. Now, let's get back to the show. I'm sure that, you know, I get asked this question a lot about how do we get, you know, a speaking space? And I can only imagine that yours is one of the most popular places to get that slot. So tell, you know, the people listening, how do they get that opportunity? Who do they write to? How do they pitch? What is it that you're looking for in particular, or your team, when it comes to speaking at the FQ?
Speaking at the FQ at Davos is all around leaders and experts around closing the gender gap. So, you know, that is so incredibly important. So they should call Talia, T-A-L-I-A, write to email Talia at thefq.com. So that's the best person to, she does all the programming and content and stuff like that. So that's the best person, and to get in touch with us sooner than later, so that we, you know, we don't have all of our conversations, they're not even panels, they're conversations with conscious leaders, are a combination of people from different categories, different countries, different, you know, organizations. And we are an umbrella. The Female Quotient, the Equality Lounge is a space. It is a space for conscious leaders to have important, unplugged, open conversations with one another. And it's not on the record like Congress. So people really do let their hair down. And we invite all organizations to come under, you know, into this space, because that's also how dynamics happen. You know, so you don't have to be a Fortune 500 CEO. You don't have to be just an expert. If you are an organization centered around closing the gaps, the equality gaps, send us a note and we will welcome you with open arms.
Amazing. What have been some of your life lessons from Davos?
Davos has been such a turning point for us in our mission. And so I have to say that, number one, always follow your heart, you know, because my heart is what brought us there. The second is bring your girlfriends with you, because it's lonely when you're an only and lonely. It's not fun, number one. And two, it won't create the impact that you need. So bring the party with you, which is, you know, bring your girlfriends, which is Power of the Pack, which I know I started at CES and I will continue forever. Our community is now 1 million women strong across 100 countries. So we do have the largest global community of women in the workforce. And number three, there's always a yes. There's always a solution. You just have to find it. And it won't necessarily be the solution that you see. Sometimes you have to create the solution in a vacuum, which is really scary. You know, I have been the first most of my career, but I have to say you got to be the first, which is seeing what's not seen and making it possible. The second is the copycat. They copy you, but they don't know what's under the hood. And the third is usually the sweeper. They win because you created, you did all the hard, heavy lifting and the work. So you need to be the first, the second, and the third. But most importantly, bring your girlfriends with you, because there is nothing more powerful and more precious than the relationship of women supporting women, which in my career at 60 years old, I never had until I started the Girls Lounge. And now the Equality Lounge. And, you know, language matters as well. You know, I don't like when we say, oh, we need male allies. We don't need male allies. Gender equality is not about women. It is not about men. It is about truly, you know, it's truly about anyone that is in a position of leadership is an ally. So when we say male allies, it's like we're giving men more power by saying that. Oh, rescue me. The prince kisses the princess and wakes her up. It is about leadership allies. And that's what we need to change the equation and close the gaps. So language matters a lot. And lastly, we need to get rid of that imposter syndrome. We need to shut that voice up in our head and own our strengths. And we often talk about the feminine strengths of passion and collaboration and empathy. And we hear that today we need empathetic human CEOs and leaders. And that's very important. But we've referred to the feminine qualities as soft skills. So we're now readdressing all that and calling them critical skills, essential skills. They are the essential skills of leadership today. And we need to make the invisible visible, because we are losing our best leaders to invisible work. Not okay. Time to make it as visible as possible and then create the solutions to close this gap so that we can all rise to the top in the workplace and in the workforce. Instead of opting out, we should be opting in with equality.
100%. And I agree that the content, the tone, the language plays a massive role in supporting that journey. And you know, I saw this post that you guys shared recently, just highlighting so much of the words that some people could, millions of people use day to day in their life, like combat this problem. And those types of languages, you know, they create a sort of subconscious kind of, you know, impact on oneself. And we may not realize how that language can play a role in our perception and everything else. So we're almost in March. What are some of the plans for the rest of the year for the FQ?
Gosh, we have so many exciting plans. We're off to South by Southwest, obviously, in Austin, Texas. So that's coming up. And that's really a place for female founders. When you look at the investment that VCs are making, you know, women are getting less than 2% of funding and women of color less than 1%. So that is ridiculous. And I challenge us to stop even putting the threshold to 5%, put the threshold to 50%. Like, why are we putting a low barrier there? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, so we need to invest in female founders. We know they outperform male founders, as a matter of fact. So I'm not really sure what the perception is that people have, but women are badass and kicking butt. So we need to invest in women, number one. So we're off to South by Southwest. We, of course, have Cannes Lions, which is another really big one in June in the south of France. And we have so many lounges in between with Oscars and, you know, Hollywood. We need to start, you know, turning the table on Hollywood. Actually, I'm off this week to speak with Women in Trucking. Ooh. I'm obsessed with that. So Women in Trucking, and of course we need more female race car drivers. So we need to up the ante there. So we're going to be working on a really big initiative. And then we have one of our biggest initiatives coming up right now, which is upskilling, reskilling, and skilling women in underserved parts of the world. I spoke at UN recently, and they were talking about how the future is female by 2030. And, well, that sounds really good, but my question was how? So I challenged everyone, and I looked at the audience, and it was a huge, massive audience. And I said, how? How is that possible when we're losing women in tech every single day? And yet the future jobs are tech jobs. They're sustainable jobs. They're green tech. You know, that's the future. And what's the game plan? Like, everyone talks a big game, but what's the roadmap? What are we doing to ensure that the future will be female by 2030? And so I left that and I decided I needed to create like a certification program for women in underserved parts of the world, 7 weeks to 7 months, thinking forward of the future skills, but then creating the certification to actually meet the needs, and then getting our big companies to guarantee the job. So if you've got the Fortune 500 companies putting the certifications in place, I want to make sure that the certification goes with the guarantee of the job, so that the future can be female by 2030.
Amazing. And you mentioned there, you gave a little hint to our audience about the motorsport connection. And this is definitely a podcast that loves the motorsports industry. And you were telling me a little bit earlier about off air about the F1 thing. So if you can share a little bit of information about what that lounge is going to kind of look like, which races, what can people expect? How do they enter? That would be amazing. And then, yeah, let's start there.
Well, first of all, you are going to be a very important part of this because you are so incredible. You're the boss. But, you know, we had Romina from Ferrari, and we also had Fabiana from FIA, and you put those two together, and that is a match of all matches. I mean, they both are super, super boss women and so talented. And so, you know, we do equality lounges at Formula One with our partner at CAA, and they're amazing lounges for visibility and conversation about what we're going to do or what we need to do. So what we're putting in place now is the action that needs to happen. And, you know, plans are in the works, but we're really looking forward to what's to come. And, you know, a lot of young girls don't go into racing because they don't see, once again, you know, I'm the co-founder of See Her. If you could see her, you could be her. They don't see women drivers. So they don't believe that they can be that. And once again, you got to go back and make the invisible visible. And sometimes put it out there, because perception isn't reality. We just think we can't. But you know what? Women are as powerful and strong a race car driver as men. It is not about this. It's about this. And there is nothing holding us back other than our imposter syndrome. We don't believe we can. So we need to show women all over the world that they can be badass race car drivers and compete in Formula One against the men. We just need more, and we need to groom them and train them and give them that confidence to push forward in a very aggressive, aggressive is not a word women love, but in a very strong way, because that's who we are. We have incredible strength.
I think it's the mindset of failure is not an option, right? Because on the one hand, you know, there is a part about the role models, and that has been kind of changing a little bit over time, but it's still a lot more work to be done. But at the same time, it's the talent pool, right? Because if you don't have, it's so hard to get, there's only 20 Formula One drivers in the world. So, you know, it's that, I think the missing element is like, where are those female drivers in F3? Like all of those feeder series that eventually lead to that pathway. And so will those equality lounges, will they be at every race, or will it be specific races, or can you divulge that information at this point?
We don't have any information. The day that they're at every race will be an amazing day. So is that goal? Absolutely. Is it doable? Absolutely. I think we start also with profiling all the female race car drivers. So that series I'm going to start immediately. So I'd love to talk to you about that. So let's discuss. That's number one. Number two, we need, so many women watch Formula One. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's 45% women watching versus 55 men. So we are watching Formula One. We are interested in Formula One. So, and the interest will go sky high by getting more, you know, women, not just in F3. We need them to go to F1.
Definitely.
So we need to groom our women from F3 to F1, or F4, F3 to F1. And it's all doable. And then we need to put brands, feminine brands, on race cars. Like, you know, so we're working on that too. Just wait for what you're going to see in this upcoming Formula One in Vegas of what we are going to do. But it is going to transform the way we have thought about what should be on a car.
Mm-hmm. I do remember in the last Mission Makers, you gave us you actually said quite a lot there about the types of brands, so I encourage you guys to go back to that episode if you want a little bit of thoughts on what Shelley's referring to there, and also like women make 65% of, you know, the new car purchasing decisions. Like they're a huge influencer in this kind of in the whole car space. So it's, I mean, yeah, I think you and I will be one of the biggest cheerleaders when this happens. Lastly, I also just want to quickly get your thoughts on
women. I want to say one thing. I don't think we're going to be cheerleaders. We will be on the field playing front and center. So cheerleaders are important for generating energy and enthusiasm, but we will be the activators of change, because that's what it's going to take.
Mm.
Right? We need to not just amplify, we need to activate. And, you know, oftentimes people think that women are watching the game and applauding. We need to be in the game, on the field, you know, making it happen, because it's not going to happen by itself.
For sure. No, thanks for correcting me on that. But yeah, I think we'll be extremely happy. And I'm sure that we will both play and have played, in fact, a role in facilitating some of that to happen. And we need as many people really pushing that through. And a lot of that comes from having conversations and like sharing, because people, it's such a closed off sport and industry. It's not like playing football where you can just pick up a ball, go to the park, no costs associated. It's such a, you know, behind closed doors type of world. And, you need those role models that you can see and can believe, hopefully give you that like perspective into what it takes, and not just on the driving perspective, but from all aspects of the industry, from, you know, engineers to like all of the different facets, right?
Look at this, women can do anything. So I mean, it's really true.
Absolutely.
If our mindset is there.
And so last one is the music industry. I'm not sure we've actually talked about this, but I'd love to know what your kind of thoughts are on kind of getting that gap much more fairer, because at present in specifically electronic music, only 2% of producers are female. And this is also crazy. Like, you know, so yeah, it would be really interesting to know what your observations and thoughts and initiatives are around any of that.
Same. I mean, it's the same problem in a different industry, you know, I mean, and so we are working big in the music industry to get more visibility. And it's not just, as you said, and you said it brilliantly, it's not just about the artist. It's about women in the business of.
Yeah.
In the business of, because that is also how we change the equation, close the gap. So we need both. We need the artists with more visibility, but we need more women in the business of music, sports, you know, race cars. Yeah, the whole nine yards. It's the business of, which we undershare, under talk about, you know, because that's where a lot of decisions get made too. And it's also men are in the business, and that's where the stereotypes get kicked in, and the perceptions that women aren't as talented, and women aren't as capable, and women aren't. What about women are? We look at what the perception is of what we can't do. I'm saying women can do anything as well, if not better. We need to put them in the arena.
Mm. And those people behind the scenes, a lot of those people are the gatekeepers, right? And they're the ones that open the doors. So 100%, you know, we absolutely need to not stop this conversation until it happens. Otherwise, we're not going to be here in 132 years' time. So, yeah, that's the thing. Shelley, is there anything else I haven't asked you that you would like to share before we close our conversation?
You know, we say we give women the megaphone, not the microphone. And so this is what you're doing. You are amplifying voices and you are activating change. And so I am just so grateful to have a champion like you for women all over the world using your voice for impact. And so thank you for all that you are doing.
Thank you. I'm super humbled to be here with you. I mean, you've done a thousand, so much. Like you are really someone I know so many people around the world look up to for what you've done. What, like, as you say, like, if you can't, that space isn't being created, like, and isn't being accessed to you, you have to create that space. You know, life is too short to like live in that box. So thank you so much. Wishing you a great rest of the day, and we'll speak to you soon. I hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we've enjoyed having this conversation. If you want to grab a copy of today's show notes, then head over to missionmakers.com/Davos, where you'll also find notes from all of our previous episodes. If you're interested in talking to me about future opportunities at Davos, producing podcasts, or coming down to some of my music and motorsports events, then you can reach out to me at missionmakers or at dj.n1nja on Instagram and TikTok.
Thank you as ever for listening. The music played in today's episode is an exclusive preview of my upcoming track with Deepak Chopra, which was titled Infinite Being at Davos, and it will be coming out later this year. So until next time, keep it laser focused.
We call ourselves human beings, not human thinkings, or not human doings, but human beings. So, you know, as you're listening to me, if you would just try this, as you're listening to me, be aware of that which is listening. Except as a presence, period. So I has no form, and because it has no form, it has to be infinite. Anything that has form, doesn't matter. The Milky Way galaxy has a border. The universe, even now, has a border. It's 47 billion light years away from us. But anything that doesn't have a border has to be infinite, which means I is infinite.